ready? Okay. Our first speaker tonight is going to be Ira A. from the We Do Recover group of Narcotics Anonymous in the State College area of NA.
Hi, my name is Ira. I'm an addict. Nice to see everybody here tonight out in the woods. This is fun. I love having a fire at a meeting. Much better than a resentment. A couple months ago, a good friend of mine, Corey, from State College, asked me to share on the triangle of self-obsession tonight, and I agreed to it because when somebody asks me to do something in the program, my automatic response is usually yes. I've had the IP triangle of self-obsession on my refrigerator for a long time because I love it, because it applies to me in every part of my life. Self-centeredness and self-obsession is the core of my disease. And so I started reading the IP, and it's very simple. And I thought, it doesn't really matter what I share tonight because it always applies to me as an addict on obsession. But since it's a workshop, I wanted to be specific on some of the things that are true for me with the triangle of self-obsession. But let me give you a little bit of background. I'm originally from Middlesex, New Jersey. My family moved up here when I was about 9 years old, and my family being my mother, my sister, and myself. Both my parents were heroin addicts. My parents' friends were heroin addicts, and I saw addicts die at a very young age. Growing up in that atmosphere, you would think that I would stay far away from drugs and alcohol, but it was actually the opposite. I started to abuse alcohol like an addict at 11, and eventually hit a bottom with alcohol by the time I was 16 and went into the rooms of the other fellowship, or parent program known as AA. I learned to follow structure and the steps in AA, but I really didn't find my heart or my family till I came to NA. The people in the rooms of NA taught me how to feel, how to be honest, and how to love myself and the newcomer for where they're at. Our stories are so similar. When I was listening to the last speaker, I could identify with everything she was saying that was true for herself. I've heard recently quite a few times that there is no advanced recovery. And my clean date is June 22nd, 1994. And I can honestly tell you that the basics still apply to me in everyday living and everyday life. But the one thing that I hold true that I'm very grateful for today is that I woke up today exactly the person who I wanted to be. And there has been a large part of my life where every day I woke up, I just knew that I didn't want to be who I was, that I was stuck in a pattern of imprisonment that I couldn't get out of. And even during the periods of time where I was abstinent from alcohol or drugs, I was still trapped in these patterns in life that I had no freedom in. I had to do things, and things just happen to me all the time that were unfortunate or ugly. I remember when they threw me out of high school, I was 15, and at the time I look back on it, and it was because I was drinking heavily every day in high school, and it was not conducive to staying in any kind of educational institution. And at the time, I just thought it was bad luck. I just thought that they were picking on me. And it's one of those things that I look back on it now, and of course it makes sense, and hindsight's always perfect, because I have a perspective of a healthier person today, and as an adult. But the triangle self-obsession, you can pick up the IP at any meeting. I suggest you do it. They're good. I wanted to outline a couple things that apply to me as an addict. And so, you know, it talks about in our addiction, in our active addiction, how our past is a resentment. And in recovery, we find acceptance for our past. And, you know, I wanted to outline some things that apply to resentment for me. And those are mistakes, missed opportunities, and loss. Those are the cores of my resentment. Missed opportunities represent pieces of my life where I was completely unaware of what was going on around me. You know, I often wondered when I was younger how people could follow instructions or complete homework for school or do anything to its end, because I couldn't ever seem to complete anything. And it was like, you know, I wanted to succeed. I wanted to be able to read a book. I wanted to, you know, finish Boy Scouts. But I could never get there because one of the things that I always was obsessed with was myself and how the situation applied to me, what the reward was for myself. You know, all the focus was on myself. So when I was involved in something like that, I could never complete it because I missed so much that was going on around me. You know, in school, I would go there to have fun and to get drunk. And so everyone else, you know, around me was completing grades. They were, you know, they were graduating, but not me. You know, I would repeat grades. I would have to go to the principal's office all the time. I remember they gave me tests because they thought that I might be mildly retarded, which seems funny to some people in my life now. But at the time, it wasn't funny because I was pigeonholing myself by just being totally self-obsessed. And that led me to always resent the people around me. You know, it was me against them. One of my favorite quotes is, "Opportunity favors the observant mind." Something that I found in the program today that has helped me find acceptance with my past is that today I know what it's like to be aware of what's going on around me. And that is something that took a lot of practice. You know, when they talk about prayer and meditation, meditation is where I found to be observant about what was going on around me. Because when my head is not full of myself, I have time to hear others. I have a little bit of quietness to hear others. If I can hold my breath long enough not to say something, then I hear someone else. That's a skill I learned in the rooms of NA. Mistakes, always looking back on my past, I could only see the mistakes that I've made in my active addiction and even in recovery. You know, I started to define myself through my mistakes. Like, you know, I self-identified with the things that I had screwed up and the things that I couldn't get back. You know, like other people were successful in life and were completing things, and I always seemed to screw things up. I mean, that was the definition. I mean, people knew that I was just going to mess it up, and they were okay with it before I was. And then, you know, I mean, that became commonplace for me in every part of my life. So, you know, it was a pattern that I became stuck in and with no way out, which is, you know, when I look back on my past, it was a constant form of, you know, or source of fuel for resentment for me because it was just a list of mistakes. But nowhere along the line did I ever learn to make good choices. You know, I didn't get an instruction manual, and I certainly didn't grow up in an atmosphere where good choices were taking place. I mean, I know people who are in the rooms who grew up with a good family, who grew up in a quote-unquote normal atmosphere, but no one ever explained to me how to make good choices in my life. And I didn't seek it out for myself, but I held myself accountable constantly for the mistakes that I was making. Around age 10, I think, my mom said to me I could pick any religion I wanted to as long as I was serious about doing it. And all my friends were going to a Baptist church, so I decided to go there too. And, you know, I went to Sunday school, and I went to church camp, and I went to church every Wednesday and every Sunday because they would give you a free ride, and that's where all my friends were, and that's where I wanted to hang out. And so I went there for many years, and I remember that my addiction grew stronger and stronger because I could never live up to the expectations I had on myself in trying to be perfect. Like, I couldn't understand why it seemed like everyone else was getting it right but me. And, you know, my life became one big accident, one big mistake. And so, in order to feel okay, I drank more, you know? And that became a source of pain for me. So it's the missed opportunities and mistakes that I've made in my past that are just became one resentment. And even in recovery, I resented myself for years for missed opportunities and mistakes that I had made. And ultimately, I chalked it up as a loss. You know, I tell people today it's nice to have a history and not a past. Because a past, nothing was ever learned. You know, the past is always the same. But having a history is a source of learning that I can draw from today. And in Narcotics Anonymous, I have a history. I have friends, I have a process, I have the steps, and I have a sponsor who gives me a perspective on who I am today from what he's learned about me by me being honest with him. And that gives me a sense of acceptance. You know, today when I make a mistake, I can make an amends for it, and it doesn't stay. You know, before, I mean, if I hurt someone's feelings, I didn't know how to say I was sorry. And if I did, it wasn't really good enough even for me. And I don't know how it could have been good enough for the other person. You know, because I had no feelings but my own. I had no empathy in my life before I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that everyone I said I was sorry to had this feeling that I wasn't sorry. And I really wasn't on the inside because I could only feel what I felt. One of the things that they say in the Triangle of Self-Obsession IP is our present is anger in active addiction and before we learn what love is. And anger is one of those emotions that seems to have a reward for it. Like, I would get angry, feel self-righteous, and get a rush of adrenaline. And it made me feel good. And every time I went back to anger, I knew I could get that feeling. But anger is the only emotion I had. Because not ever being okay with who I was, I never felt any other emotions. Like, I didn't know how other people expressed love or affection. To me, it was only something, you know, people were only a source of what they could do for me or what they could give me. And so, I remember, you know, I would always be angry with people. I never got angry at things. So, you know, that source of people only being able to give me what I want. And even today, you know, if I spend more than 5 minutes angry, I know I'm in a bad spot. And even in traffic, you know, I can lose my temper and, you know, I've gotten the bird, I think, twice this week, you know. But, you know, I mean, I don't get angry over it. You know, it's just something that happens. Because anger becomes a pattern for me where I try and feed my addiction that feeling of instant gratification. I get angry, I get the rush of adrenaline, and I get satisfaction from that through self-righteousness. I didn't know the other emotions had a reward. You know, if anger is the only emotion that I have on tap, it's the only one that I know the best, so it's the one I practice the most. I used to tell the people in the rooms, you know, oh yeah, I broke my steering wheel in my vehicle today. Well, they say, well, what happened? Well, I got angry in traffic and I broke it. You know, I punched the center out, I cracked the rim, whatever. And they would be like, wow, that's crazy. But that's exactly the way, you know, that, I mean, I could only be honest about what I was doing in my life because I know that, you know, at this point I've learned that by being honest in the program has netted me the greatest results. And left to my own devices, reserved a chair for me in the rooms. So, you know, they talk about in the IP about the natural process of growing up where other people learn to be self-sufficient and find that serenity and happiness comes from the inside of ourselves. Well, you know, always going to others and to things for my happiness always led me to disappointment because it's never going to be good enough. It's never going to make me feel okay. Ultimately, it's always going to let me down, which is always going to make me angry. You know, and always wanting has always made me uncomfortable. And so, you know, by not wanting, by being okay with who I am today, has left me feeling serene. And so, I practice love with people today because this is a spiritual program, not a religious program. There is no ritual, there are no sins. We're all in this shipwreck together, so I don't feel superior or inferior to anyone here. You people are all my immediate family. This is where I'm the most comfortable. This is the safest spot on earth to me in an area where there's a bunch of junkies. You know? I mean, I've fallen asleep in a room full of you people, and I woke up, I still had all my money on me, nobody stabbed me, and I had all my clothes on. That's a good thing. You know, I mean, that's a lot of love for me. So, you know, I meet somebody, they first come in, right, and they may not have had a shower, they may not have eaten or slept in a couple days, and I see myself. And that's how the empathy is for me. I know where they're coming from because I've been there. When I came in, I was homeless, friendless, jobless, and I had been thrown out of college with no understanding of how I was going to get any of my life back. And now I'm going to smoke at a meeting, which I haven't done since I was 16. Those old AA meetings used to be just a big cloud of smoke. It was fantastic. You could be real shady in a room full of smoke. I live by the charity of the people in these rooms. And, you know, it was easy for me to identify in the beginning because not having, you know, having lost the place where I lived and having no job and no ownership over anything, I slept on couches, I ate a lot of picnic food at retreats and campouts, and, you know, I got my entire life back from the people in these rooms. And so I realized, for me in the beginning, the ability for one addict to help another is without parallel because it saved my life. But today, you know, I'm able to practice the emotions and get the rewards back from being able to be compassionate and non-judgmental with the newcomer or the old-timer who's suffering. You know, because there is no advanced recovery. You know, and some days, you know, there are people with 10 days clean who will say something that will change my heart. You know, and there's, you know, some things I can't deny to be true. I remember not, you know, a while ago somebody shared what was on a Supreme Pizza at a meeting. I thought it was great because I wasn't sure totally of the ingredients. But that same person a month later said at a meeting, love is irreplaceable. And that today for me is an absolute statement, and I try and get away from absolutes in my life today. But that is one of the truths that I think that I found in this program is that love is irreplaceable. You can't replace it with drugs. You can't replace it with alcohol. You can't replace it with money or relationships. or cars or anything. The only thing in my life that I do know is when I don't have love, I'm hurting. And any time I want it, I can go to a meeting. I can pick up the phone and I can call an addict and I automatically feel loved and accepted. I want to talk a little bit about fear because it's mentioned in the IP. I don't really have a lot to say on fear, except one of my favorite sayings in the pamphlet says it's, our life is like a fantasy in reverse. And I often think of the Seven Dwarfs, and or Sleeping Beauty, like where they wake her up, because that would be reverse. I remember since I was very young, I was constantly afraid. Like, it was that feeling I woke up to every day and I went to bed with every night. I've been in some terrible situations, where people have had guns on me and stuff. And, it didn't seem like a big deal at the time to me. It seemed normal part of the process for dealing drugs. But the fear that I had was that I was going to die alone. I didn't care if you pulled a gun or a knife on me. That was kind of expected. I really couldn't trust anybody. So, that was okay. But that emptiness on the inside, that spiritual death that started with the using, that was my fear. That fear that I was going to lose myself enough to be able to find my way back. And, I remember I was at a cabin one time, a lot of times, a bunch of people would go out to the woods to use. And I remember looking down at my body and, obviously, I was using. And I remember looking down at my legs and I could see my legs disappearing. And I thought, I'm watching my own soul die. And that's a feeling, I'll never forget that moment for myself. Because I thought, soon, this will burn up enough of my life, this will take enough away from me where I'm not going to know who I am anymore, where I belong. And I only ever wanted to find, who I was spiritually. For a while I tricked myself with drugs, thinking that that was my way I could hire my consciousness, maybe find God. And ultimately, what it was doing was spiritually bankrupting me. And so that fear was constant. It just never went away. It was that underlying hum in my life. And, I remember even as a child, I felt that way. Even before I started using, I constantly felt lost or left behind. And one of the things that the program has given me is a relationship with my higher power. And I tell people, when I go to bed at night, I sleep very well. My head hits the pillow, I'm out in 5 minutes. I do a quick 10-step prayer every night, and then boom, I'm out. And that's a gift of recovery to me, because I know that when I close my eyes, if I don't wake up, I am exactly who I wanted to be that day, because I'm not doing it anymore. I've already been in control of my life. I know what unmanageability looks like. I know what all those things lead to. And that's where the faith has replaced the fear for me. About a year ago, my life kind of fell apart on itself. I had gotten in a relationship with somebody. And, I've been coming around for a hot minute, and I've avoided dating in the room. So I've avoided the program because I thought this could be terribly wrong. But I was with this girl for 7.5 years, and the relationship fell apart. And I remember, one of the reasons that it fell apart for me is because every day I woke up, I thought I knew what was best for me. And, you know, I started hiding things from my friends in the rooms, but I never stopped going to meetings. You know, I wouldn't do that because I had tried that around, you know, at one period in my program, and I isolated, and it didn't work out well for me. You know, I always say isolation makes addicts weird. Like, we start doing weird shit to ourselves, you know, like, you know, tape recording our ideas, you know, or like, you know, I mean, I remember I had like 35 carburetors in my bedroom, you know, when I isolated, like, that's a good idea, right? You know, so start making shit out of matchsticks. But, part of the reason that, you know, my life will fall apart even in recovery is because when I'm in control, I don't know what my higher power has planned for me. I can't say, this is who I should be, because who I thought I should be and who I really am are usually two different things. You know, there are times in my life where I don't know that I'm a compassionate person until someone else tells me. You people give me a better perspective on my life, because my perspective is only a mirror, and when I look at that, it's always backwards. There are a lot of days that I've walked out of my house and waited for another recovering addict to tell me that they were happy to see me, because that has changed my whole life. You know, I know that you guys accept me for who I am. And a lot of that has been learned through being okay with my faith. You know, I mean, I know that I'm going to be okay if I don't use, no matter what. I mean, some of the worst things in my life have happened to me in recovery, but I didn't use, no matter what. And they haven't lasted. They haven't taken me out. Using has never been the solution for me. I'm telling you, it's like a dream come true. Yeah, the first AA meetings I showed up at, there was a guy there who knew Dr. Bob. His name was Harold. And so, like, you know, I mean, he had like 45 years clean or whatever. Sober. Clean to me, because I drank like an addict. But I eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches like an addict, too. They're like 3 to 6 pounds, right? You know? I asked him, because I was 16 at the time, and I thought, he must know the secret. Like, there must be a secret to never drinking again. So after a meeting one time, you know, I snuck up to him, like, hey, Harold, okay, man, tell me, how'd you do it? And he says, every day I wake up, I want it. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, every day you got to want it. You got to want it more than you want the drinking. And I can honestly tell you, without the acceptance, the love, and the faith, I start to lose that focus of wanting this every day. I mean, I've bared my teeth. I've sat in a chair one time in my room after I got back into college. I sat in that chair for 4 hours, holding on to the arms of the chair, afraid that if I got up out of that chair, it would carry me. That would be enough momentum to carry me out to where I knew there was a dealer. You know, I've had to do that, grit your teeth and just hold on as tight as you can. I mean, I sat there till I just fell asleep because I couldn't do anything else. I was terrified of what I might do to myself. So, you know, always remembering that, you know, the gifts in recovery keep that wanting it close to me. I mean, every day I wake up, I do want this more, you know. And then I'm going to be okay, as long as I'm not the one making decisions in my life about who I should be and who I shouldn't be. Because I have been obsessed with the self. I still am. Maybe some days only inside my own head, and I don't express it as much as other days. But it helps that knowing that I'm going to be okay, I don't have to try to be so hard to be somebody who I think I should be. You know, I mean, I know that sounds confusing, but it's very confusing inside this neighborhood. There's not a lot of good street signs. They all point to somewhere bad. Like, you end up in the hood immediately. So, you know, I felt very grateful to be asked to share on Triangle of Self-Obsession, because really I could get up here and just tell my story, and it would relate to the pamphlet. Because when I tell people in the rooms, you know, when I have an impulse, it feels like a fire. Everyone here understands that. They understand what it's like to be stuck in a pattern and not be able to get out of it in your life. That's something that I can always identify with. So I'm very grateful, and I'm not sure how much time I've gone on and haven't gone on, but I know they gave me about a half an hour, and I'm going to keep it simple, and that's all I have to share. Appreciate it. Thanks for the flashlight.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cindy, and I'm an addict. And our next speaker is, if I can see with my little cell phone here, thank you.
You're welcome.
I shall see the way. I would like to introduce our second speaker, which is Tim P. from the Friday and Monday Night Fellowship of NA, and is from Central Westmoreland area of NA. I hope I got that right. Do you need this flashlight?
Addict named Tim. We have a moment of silence, please. Father God, my understanding and yours to come in and you're welcome. Addict named Tim. All right. Thank Ira for sharing, and you know, the triangle of self-obsession is a reading that we read, you know, pretty regularly around this area, I think. You know, I think this area too, I hear it in meetings, and I know where I come from in Greensburg, we read it as a regular reading at most meetings. A lot of places don't have that reading, and when people visit, you know, from out of town, they often say to me, wow, that's kind of nice that you guys include that in your readings. And I guess it is. But sometimes because we hear it so often, like many things, we take it for granted, you know? It's a very, very simple IP. You know what? I'm going to start talking about just what's on my mind and where I'm at. You know, first of all, it's wonderful to be asked to speak at the Unity Retreat. And I guess I gotta kind of stay here, right? Because, yeah, okay. Because this is the hardest thing for me to do, is to, like, stand behind the podium, you know? Yeah. Take the mic with me, yeah. But I'll try to do it as best I can from here. So, you know what, though? But, like, you know what? I was sitting back here earlier when Monica was sharing tonight. I looked up at the sky, I saw the stars, and I mean, isn't this great? I mean, it can't get no better than this, you know? I love it. I love Narcotics Anonymous, you know? But let me get back to the triangle of self-obsession. Where I'm at right now in my process of recovery is I've kind of got a renewed interest in Step 11. By that I mean I was at a convention in the fall, and I met some people over there where I was attending this NA convention, and they helped me a lot with some things that I didn't even know I was, like, looking for, was prayer and meditation. It opened my mind to some new possibilities and helped to increase me as a person and a little bit of faith and all that stuff. And so some of these practices that I've been doing recently have been real important to my daily routine. And practicing 11 on a daily basis has helped me to be me, you know? It's helped me to be a little bit more accepting of you. It's helped me to just be, like, okay with the world and my surroundings today. I guess what I need to share is that, like, if I'm a person full of anger, resentment, fear. You know, some of these things tend to, like, block me. And I'm not allowed to have that, like, sense of peace and serenity that I sometimes experience when I'm practicing step 11. You know? And I don't know if you understand what I mean by blocking me, but you know what? I guess sometimes I feel that this is a place where I can grow spiritually. I know it is. You know, if I choose to. And that's my desire today. To become a more spiritual person and grow along those lines as best I can. And when I'm sitting and I'm full of, like, resentment, and I'm thinking all this crazy stuff in my head, you know? Like, you know, what do we say about the resentment is like me taking poison to kill you? You know? And believe me, I've been there. You know? And acceptance is like allowing people to be where they're at sometimes. You know? I also got to say, for me, it's been real important to practice the spiritual thing of forgiveness. You know, just because something happens or somebody says or does something to me, doesn't mean that I can't forgive them. You know, how long am I going to carry that stuff around? I came in here not knowing where I was going to go. You know, I came into Narcotics Anonymous not even knowing if I wanted to stay clean. But I know I didn't want to have to die like I was living. And you people, my predecessors, helped me to understand some basic stuff early on. You know, I didn't know how to love myself. You know, today I can say most days I can love myself. Not every day, you know, not every day. But I do have self-love that I didn't have when I got here. The first experience that I had was with some people in an NA meeting loving me unconditionally. Unconditionally. In spite of myself. You know? And looking back, you know, I was probably a real hard person to love some days too, you know? Some days still I am, if you know me, you know? But that unconditional love was real important. And it's something that I try to practice today as best I can as well. In Narcotics Anonymous too, we have this thing called empathy. You know, and that empathy is that you know, our literature talks about it's that wordless language. I know how you feel. You know how I feel. You know, when I tell my story or talk about some struggles or something, you know, you understand because it's something that's a little bit deeper than words can even say. You know? And that empathy is a healing place too. And that's where that therapeutic value of one adding helping another comes into place. Now, I you know, for me today, resentment's a pretty useless thing. I really can't, I just choose not to, like, carry too many resentments at all. You know? I will for a minute. I'm human. I'm going to be honest. I get attitudes about stuff. I get attitudes about stuff that's, like, important to me. Like Narcotics Anonymous. You know? When people, like, disrespect the fellowship or do something that's kind of like, you know, off color or whatever, I get an attitude. And if you know me, you know what I'm talking about. Right? Because this is the fellowship that saved my life. This is home for me, man. This is, you know, I feel comfortable here. No other place I'd rather be. You know? N.A. In the middle of the woods. God's amphitheater, you know? How about this, you know? I came in here too, you know, and I didn't think that, I didn't think I had a whole lot of anger. I didn't think I had a whole lot of fear. If you had asked me if I was a fearful person, I'd have said no. You know, my experience though is when I started to look at when I started to do a personal inventory, step four. You know, I wrote some stuff. I wrote some more stuff. You know, it was suggested that I write something every day. I did that as best I could, and you know what? Once I started to process some of the stuff with my sponsor, I saw a lot of the stuff was kind of fear-based, and it was a real awareness for me. It was something that I never had, like, acknowledged or took time. Whoever does an inventory, you know, really, right? It's not something that I would have thought of doing, but you know what? A lot of my stuff was driven by fear. A lot of my actions, a lot of the stuff I did out there was fear-based. You know, but the awareness is the key to change. I learned that, you know. I still learn that today. I still see that today a lot. You know, my awareness is the key to change. But just by writing it down, you know, and sharing it with another person, it was a very helpful process for me. I always talk about anger, you know, is a useless emotion. And what I mean by that is anger by itself isn't a whole lot of stuff. It doesn't have a whole lot of substance for me. If I'm angry, I usually look underneath it. There's other stuff under there. You know? Somebody did something to me. My feelings got hurt. You know? Or something like that was going on. And so I need to look at the exact nature of that stuff too sometimes today to get out of that triangle. You know? That's the stuff that blocks my spiritual progress. You know? We were talking down at Harmony House earlier briefly about some of this tonight. And you know what? I'm a human. I'm human. I'm going to have resentment, anger, and fear. You know? Those are stuff that's going to happen in my life. I probably experienced some of that stuff today in my office, you know? But like anything else in my life today, it's what am I going to choose to do with it? You know? Your people promised me one thing when I got to NA. I love NA. You know, we keep things simple. Simplicity is the theme of the event this weekend, too. And I love that. Because it is real simple. I complicate it in my head sometimes, just like you all probably do it once in a while. But you know what? Simplicity is the key. And when I got to NA, the thing that attracted me was the only thing you promised me was one thing. One thing. It's all I need is freedom. Freedom. I went to some other places. They promised me all kind of stuff. You know? NA. Freedom. Because I got freedom. I don't have the drug in me. The drug's not controlling me. I can have that freedom of choice. I've been able to do whatever I want today. And that goes along with the resentment, anger, and fear. How long am I going to embrace those feelings? How long am I going to be miserable in that triangle? It's up to me. What am I going to choose to do with them? You know? You know, the concept of love is real powerful. You know, I've been noticing like love a lot lately for some reason. And I'm not talking about the sexual love, you know. I think sex and that's a whole other thing, but that's a whole other topic for maybe tomorrow night. I got the bed too in Harmony House, the big love bed. No. But I see love in my neighborhood. I see love practice in my family. I see love practice in my home group. You know? Love is a very, very powerful thing. Because if I'm practicing love, and if I'm sharing my love, you know, it's just like this gift of recovery. It's like all this other stuff that I've gotten, you know, because I haven't put nothing in. Because I have the freedom. I have freedom from active addiction. I'm able to do stuff with my life today. But if I keep it all to myself, if I keep this gift of recovery to myself, it's no good. It's about giving it back. The same thing with that concept of love. You know? I came at one point to learn through my process in step two. My process of coming to believe is that, like, I don't have this punishing, vengeful God today, you know? And growing up, I had some kind of belief system, and I've learned some different things along the way. You people have shared some stuff with me, and eclectically, I've developed this whole faith thing and come to believe in some stuff. And my higher power is all forgiving today, you know? And so I need to try to practice that stuff. I choose to try to practice that stuff as best as I can. You know, sometimes it's hard to love some people, though. You know? Huh? But those are the people that really need to, you know, I have to knock down that barrier. I have to, like, knock down my fear and those walls and reach out and try to, like, get to that person. You know? And sometimes the only thing I can do is maybe embrace them and give them a hug. You know, if you come to my home group, we greet people there. We try to greet everybody that comes in my home group. You know? And maybe that's a loving touch, you know? I don't know. But, you know, sometimes some people, I honestly see them come in the door, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, you again, you know? And, you know, sometimes people don't come here, like, all cleaned up and well-dressed and shaven and all that. You know, sometimes they're coming in, like, tattered and stinky. You know? Right? I mean, it's the reality of this disease, unfortunately. But those are the people we need to, like, embrace with love even more. Those are the people that I try to reach out to a little bit more. Yeah, if I have a little bit of love and I share it, and you get a little bit of that love and you share it, and that person shares it, you know, it's got this multiply and trickle-down effect. We're going to change the world a little bit. You know, we're doing it simply by, like, not putting nothing in us today. It's about sharing this stuff, the simplicity of it all, giving it back. You know, and not having this resentment, anger, and fear in this triangle of self-obsession block this stuff from giving it back or from experiencing maybe some spiritual growth. That love, if I'm expressing love, and I'm practicing that spiritual principle of love, it's going to be hard for me to be pretty angry, isn't it? I think so, you know? But when I get some attitude sometimes, when I see somebody doing something once again, here they go, you know? Whatever it is, it's difficult. It takes some strength, and it takes some practice. I have this, I try to have this theory, I have this kind of thing I share sometimes with people, and it's, do something that scares you every day. Get out of your comfort zone, you know? Do something that frightens you every day. As long as it's kind of healthy, you know, that's the thing. But, like, I get real comfortable in my life today, right? You know, I have a routine, I do this, I do that, da-da-da, you know? And life's always an adventure. It can turn and twist and whatever. But, you know what? When I start stepping out of my comfort zone and doing some different things, I'm able to experience life now. That's a good thing. You know? That's a real good thing for me. When I got to N.A., I got out of an institution, okay? When I got out of an institution, I took a suggestion. And I went to an N.A. meeting that day. It was St. Stephen's in Wilkinsburg. Wake-up meeting, 10 or 10:30. And, like, I didn't think too much about it, because driving from the institution, or coming from the institution to this place, I had other things on my mind. I get to the meeting, I'm looking down the stairwell, and I'm full of fear. I didn't know what to expect. What I was greeted with was nothing but love. Nothing but hope. All that positive stuff. You know? It was a good first experience for me. And I don't ever want to forget that. You know, I had nothing to be fearful of once I got there. You know? What I fear today... No. What I have faith in today, okay, since that's the opposite of fear, I have a lot of faith. But the basic thing I have faith in, the basic simplicity, most simple thing that I have faith in, that if I don't take the first one, I'm not going to get high. Huh? If I don't put something in me, I'm going to be okay. You people taught me that. I seen it through your example. I saw you live this stuff. Not just talk about it, but I watch it too. And that faith is real important to me, as it was back then in 1988. I still need to see that. I still have faith that if I don't take the first one, I'm not going to get high. And I'm going to be able to live life today, no matter what. I remember my sponsor when I was doing five. Telling me. And this made, I don't know, at the time it made a big impact on me. And he was sharing some of his stuff about walking through fears. Getting through the other side. Doing something like, you know, we normally wouldn't have the fortitude to do. What he said was, you know what? There's nothing that we can't get through to the other side. It's the God of our understanding together. You know, we walk through that fear to get to the other side. We can experience growth, the we, together. That's been my experience too. If I choose to, I can walk through the stuff that I'm fearful about. You know, take you, me, the God of my understanding, and I can do whatever I want in my life. It's a wonderful thing. You know, it's kind of like strength in numbers or something, you know? Because I still can find some, I don't know. I don't know how you perceive me sometimes. I mean, I'm not sure if that matters. But some people have told me that, you know, they think that, like, I appear like as this confident guy, I'm okay with myself, blah, 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 kind of mellow, da, da, da. You know what? Sometimes I get, like, kind of jittery inside. Sometimes I get, like, insecure. It's not about stuff like the big stuff, you know? It's about, like, stuff that, like, I'm afraid to talk about. That I'm afraid to ask for help with. You know? And if I stay stuck and don't share that stuff, or don't ask for some help to get through it, to get to the other side, I'm going to stay there and be that scared little insecure guy again. You know? It's not what I'm here for. It's not what I'm here for. I'm here to get through that stuff. You know? Yeah, I'm not that same person that I was when I got here. Growing up, natural process. Some of us get screwed up along the way, though, huh? Imagine that. You know? I think I was screwed up from day one. You know? You know, some of my earliest thoughts are like doing stuff to like addictively. You know? Like, I would do stuff I had a record player, alright? You know, you guys know what a record player is? You know? It's a thing that plays records. You know what a record is? No. But I had this electric record player. Alright? And, I used to, like, listen to my little 45s or whatever, you know? I'm probably 4 or 5 years old or something, I don't know. But I plugged it in. And one day I plugged it in and I got this little jolt by holding on to the prong. You know, I would jolt myself all the time. I liked that little electric thing, you know? I found out that that was pleasurable in a weird kind of way. You know? That's just one example. I like to feel good. You know, I like that stuff. I'm obsessed with it. I couldn't wait to come home and play my records. I don't want to play my records. I wanted to get that feeling. You know? Looking outside of myself for other things, too. You know, I find contentment within myself today. You know, I was told that, like, recovery is an inside job, and by the process of practicing steps and traditions in my life, I'm able to, like, fulfill some of that, you know? And I didn't always believe you people, you know? And so I go outside and try to fill it up with Dot Talley, you know, one of our predecessors, Dot Talley. Anybody remember Dot here? Yeah? Hopefully, you know, and she used to talk about this God box. You know, we come in here with this empty God box. We used to fill it up with sex and drugs and partying and all that crazy hoot and holler, you know, all the stuff that we did out there, right? It kind of filled this void inside of us, right? We get clean, we come into Narcotics Anonymous, we got this void, we have this empty God box, you know? And what I, you know, do is what Dot, you know, Talley and my other predecessors suggested. I fill it up with, fellowship, steps, meetings, sponsorship, you know, this stuff that, like, gets me a little bit healthier from the inside on. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. You know, relying on everything around me to make me feel better, like, doesn't last. You know? You know, I like nice things. You know? I like nice things. I have more shoes than anybody ever needs, you know? I like shoes. But you know what? The things that I have, I own. They don't own me, you know? Like, I work hard. I do a lot of stuff. And so I sometimes like to, you know, reward myself or go out to dinner or do something nice or whatever. But the thing is, they don't own me. You know, I'm going to be okay no matter what, as long as I don't stay trapped in that friggin' triangle. You know, when I heard that triangle, when I heard, you know, the about the IP and heard you people share meetings initially about this triangle of self-obsession, I thought about the Bermuda Triangle. You know, that place, you know, where you go and you never come back, right? You know? It's kind of weird that they're both triangles, huh? I don't know if there's a coincidence or not there. But you know what? If I stay in this triangle of resentment, anger, and fear, where am I going to be? You know? Stuck in some black hole of an ocean or something. I can only tread water for so long, you know? I need to ask for help. Help me out of here. Get me, you know, come on, save me. Throw me a life preserver. Throw me basic ducks, whatever, you know. Do something, please. Get me out of here. It's about that humbling, you know. Asking for help and getting out of it. Not staying stuck. You know, my recovery, I've had stuck points. I've experienced that. I've been, you know, I've been full of resentment. You know, done service and been resentful. You know? Had stuff done to me, been resentful. You know? I've been cleaned up. My house a couple years ago was cleaned up, robbed. Everything. Everything. I came home. Everything was gone. Except my dog. Not a very good watchdog, but I love him, but, you know. There was somebody that knew me. Somebody that knew my patterns. It was probably the person that I talked to that morning and told them where I was, who was somebody in the fellowship at that time. Somebody who I loved and trusted. But you know what? I still feel a little bit hurt about that. But I'm not angry. I saw the main suspect at an event not long ago. And as a matter of fact, the event was at a funeral of one of our members. And I went over and said hello to him and embraced him. Didn't talk about the incident, but you know what? I have to get beyond that stuff. You know? the stuff that happened to me, the stuff that he, you know, whoever took whatever is replaceable. You know? I can become a bitter, angry person if I want to stay stuck there. I want to allow my spirit to grow and develop. And so I want to, like, be free. You know, you people promised me that, right? Freedom. So why stay stuck in that triangle? Wow. You know what? I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to come and share tonight. It's been an honor. I'd like to thank my friends and enemies and whoever's out there for coming to support me tonight. It's kind of strange being up here. This is real, honestly, this has been different. Because I can't see you except some shadows. And I can't move around. I feel like I'm like really confined here. And this has been a real struggle because I tend to walk around. But you know what? It's been a great experience. And I'm just happy that you asked me to come share. So thank you. And enjoy the weekend, guys, huh? Unity.